Hello and welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And tonight, we look at what it takes to climb the corporate ladder. Both of our guests have weaved their way through huge corporations. In fact, our first guest, his organization is the second largest in the world at what they do. It's the hotel chain Marriott International. And our first guest is Paul Simmons, the Chief Financial Officer for the Middle East and African region. And our second guest has worked his way up through the banking ranks through one of the largest banks in the entire GCC. His name is Suhail bin Tarif. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Tanfif, which is an organization which helps companies improve their business services, their back office processes, their call centers, and better customer relations, etc. It is a captive company of Emirates NBD, where Suhail had initially worked his way up, starting as a HR manager. So an interesting climb through the ranks of shared services into the top spot as CEO. And our first guest as well started as an accountant and worked his way up into the chief financial officer seat. And we're going to find out exactly how he did that. The best part about the show is it's interactive. So if you have a question about your career, if you have a question about something you're going through at work, you can SMS us at 4001, or you can go and download our mobile app and send your question in directly. Again, if you have a question about your career, you can SMS us at 4001. And we're going to have a bit of a competition tonight to see who has the worst manager. If someone has a nasty manager story, if you have that manager who's just threatened by you or intimidated by you and wants you out of the company, what have they done? What's your worst experience with someone that you're reporting to? The bad boss story. What's your worst bad boss story? And if you're currently dealing with a bad boss, let us know and we can offer you some advice on how to deal with it. I mean, both of our guests tonight don't get into the top spot without navigating a few potholes and curveballs along the way. So that's really one of the things we'll be looking at. If you have a bad boss story or the worst one you've ever heard of, SMS is at 4001 and you will receive a free executive coaching session. But enough for me. Let's hear a little bit about our first guest, Paul Simmons. Find out a little bit more about his background.
Paul Simmons is the Chief Finance Officer of hotel chain Marriott International for the Middle East and Africa region. Prior to working with Marriott International, Paul had a long and successful career with Whitbread, Marriott's franchise partner in the United Kingdom. Paul started working for Whitbread in 1989 as a senior analyst and held a series of roles of increasing responsibility before being promoted to the position of financial controller in 2000 and group financial controller in late 2001. Paul joined Marriott in 2005 with the conversion of Whitbread's franchised Marriott properties to Marriott-managed hotels. Having played a key role in this transition, he was responsible for the complete integration of Whitbread's finance discipline. In 2008, Paul was promoted to Vice President Finance, and 2 years later, in the role of Vice President Business Operations Finance Europe, Paul had operational finance oversight of East and Western Europe. Paul came to Dubai in 2011 when he was appointed Vice President Finance Business Partner for the Marriott International Office in Dubai. As part of his role, he manages all the directors of finance for all Marriott International and the Ritz-Carlton hotels in the Middle East and Africa region, and all central finance functions in the Dubai office. 2 years later, in 2013, Paul was promoted to Chief Financial Officer. Paul shares the family home with his wife Sue and 3 children. Being an accountant, Paul kept it simple with regards to having children, all boys born almost exactly 2 years apart, who are now 9, 11 and 13. Paul is passionate about cars, and this year he treated himself to a Maserati, a lifetime ambition, second only to becoming an accountant.
Hello, Paul, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So you just bought a brand new Maserati.
I did indeed, yeah.
Which one is that?
I bought the Maserati Ghibli S.
Ah, nice, very nice car. I think that's a very popular one, though. I think they're having record sales with that model.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think they sold 700 actually this year.
Wow. Wow. Very, very nice. I notice your boys come every 2 years, just like your promotions, I guess, at work.
Perfectly planned. Typical accountant.
That's your, you're on a 2-year plan, huh, for the, with everything. So how did it all start? I mean, did you, as a kid, were you counting beans? Were you counting the marbles? And you always had a vision of becoming a CFO?
Well, I have to admit, this is actually one of my most embarrassing stories, which I don't actually tell that many people. So at least it's just between me and you.
Yes, and 200 other thousand people.
But when I was 11 years old, I moved from my junior school up to the secondary school. And on the first day, the teachers went round all of the students and said, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And yet, you guessed it, people were saying, yeah, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a fireman, I want to be a policeman, I want to be a soldier. What did I want to be? Yes, you got it. I wanted to be an accountant. How much was I ridiculed as on the first day for that?
But was your father an accountant, or where does this idea creep into an 11-year-old's mind?
Well, that's the crazy thing as well, because my father was into sales and my mother was into purchasing, so they actually both disliked accountants. So I think it was just really, almost like you're saying, it was my love for numbers and counting. And actually, my grandfather had a coin collection, an old coin collection. And I think that got me hooked onto the money side as well. And I just put two and two together, you know, money, numbers, had to be an accountant.
But starting out, accountants don't actually make very much. I mean, at the beginning of the career is tough, it's dry, it's long hours, it's brutal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I still remember to this day, my actual first salary was £6,150, and that was back in 1987. And that was not a lot of money. My friends were going out to banks and that sort of stuff straight from school, and then they were earning £20,000 at that point in time.
Wow. So some sacrifice there. And did you become a chartered accountant, or what's the path into the CFO role?
Yeah, well, that was a bit of a twist and turns there, because I had it all planned. You know, I needed to do an A-level in economics, an A-level in maths, and an A-level in history. I needed 3 C's to go on to the university of my choice, which was the City University. And then it was going to be 2 years there. And then I was going to come out and go and do a chartered accountancy course in a practice. It all went pear-shaped, unfortunately, though, because I only got one A-level. And I actually failed my A-level maths. And that was for a number of reasons.
And one of those, they say Michael Jordan got cut from the basketball team. So there you go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yet, you know, so I failed two of the A-levels. So then I had to, you know, I had to make another choice as to how I was going to get there, because I couldn't do it with a degree. Fortunately, through, you know, looking through all of the potential courses that I could, you know, to get to that same goal, I came across a diploma, which you only needed one A-level for. I took that diploma. I excelled in that diploma, so I could actually then go on to a certified course and go on to professional exams. And, you know, through a lot of hard work, I actually got, you know, the highest marks right across the professional exams until I actually then qualified.
Wow. So you were determined. Normal people would, you know, you fail math, you figure, hey, accounting's not for me, but not you. You said, you know, I'm going to push on, I'm going to drive through this. Bit of a determined soul.
Yeah. No, I saw, you know, there was still a chance. It was still my dream. It was still my goal. You know, I could see if I put the effort in. And I think that, to be honest, it was a lot easier when I actually got onto those courses, because it was then more about accounting. You know, it was more about understanding businesses and that sort of thing. And that was really my passion. So I actually ended up actually in the courses actually teaching the other students as well as the teachers, because it was something I just did excel in.
Wow. Okay. And then, so how do you tell us quickly your career path from there on into your current role?
Well, when in my final year, when I was doing my studying, I joined a public practice that wasn't that far from my home, and they actually offered me a job for when, you know, I finally gave up the student life. And so I took that up, and that was why, you know, that was the role at £6,150 as an auditor. And that was 2 years of great experience because I covered everything. I actually did accounts out of a shoebox. So, you know, a decorator would give me a shoebox full of invoices and I'd have to create his accounts. And at the other end of the spectrum, I was doing the audit for Reebok Shoes, which was based up in Lancashire. And everything you could think of between those two. So it was great, great experience for me in a relatively short period of time. And I actually went from the junior auditor to the senior auditor within that 2 years.
Wow. So and then how do you end up in hospitality?
Well, from once I got to that 2 year period, I then started to do the audits of the companies that I'd already done a year before. And at that point, it was, you know, I'm not getting any more experience. I'm not getting any more valuable experience. So it was time to move into the industry. And I first actually went to Rank Xerox, based in Hertfordshire, as a financial accountant, had a team of about 20 people supporting me. But after 9 months, they announced that they were actually going to relocate to Gloucestershire, a place called Mitcheldean. Now, the only thing in Mitcheldean is Rank Xerox and sheep. So as a young, you know, what was that, 23-year-old, still single, Mitcheldean wasn't the place for me. So I looked to see, you know, where else I could go. And that was when I got the opportunity to join Whitbread.
And then that was the beginning of the hospitality.
That was the beginning of the hospitality.
And but it's a bit of serendipity as you end into Marriott. You kind of rise through the ranks and then you get bought by Marriott.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was doing a new role almost dead on every 2 years, a bit like you're saying with the kids, you know, having one every 2 years. I was getting a job every 2 years. And that was partly me, you know, partly luck in terms of being right place, right time, but also with my managers, you know, keen to actually move me forward and get me through different parts of the business within Whitbread. And yeah, after 8 years on the pubs and restaurant side, I then moved on to the hotel side, looking actually after the shared service center for Premier Inns and Marriott's. That's when they were a franchise. After a year of doing that, we then actually consolidated. So I actually moved away from the shared service center and actually became part of the Whitbread Hotel Company, as it was at that point in time, reporting directly to the financial director. Because we actually saw that, you know, there was a lot of breakdown in communication between the hotels, the head office, and the shared service center. So we actually brought those things closer. And then, yeah, a couple of years later, Whitbread decided to sell the hotels at a great time, it has to be said, and got a good value out of the 42 properties that were sold. And we were sold to Royal Bank of Scotland, who then sold them on to a private company. And yeah, at that point, we moved from a franchised operation to a managed operation, and I became a managed associate.
By chance, you end up in the second largest hotel company in the world.
Yeah, well, we never think of ourselves as second. We're number one.
Number one, of course.
And you know, we're looking to actually hit a million hotels, not in the two, a million, sorry, a million rooms. In the not, that would have been a bit too many.
1 million hotels.
1 million rooms in the not too distant future.
Okay.
I mean, already we're over 4,000 hotels across the world.
Right. Yeah. A million would be an impressive jump.
Yeah, that would be.
It's exciting to go to, I mean, you're three times the size from a staff perspective. You have 600,000 staff.
Yeah.
Was three times the size of HSBC, for example, yeah. Just to get a benchmark of how big you are. You're like a small country.
Yeah.
Or a city, at least.
If you think about it, I mean, 700,000 rooms, and you've probably got 1 to 1.5 associates per every room. So you're just doing the math. You're almost at a million people if you did it on that basis,
wow.
If you're 1.5. So, yeah, it's huge.
Well, this is Paul Simmons, the Chief Financial Officer for the hotel chain Marriott International for the Middle East and Africa region. Coming up, he's going to be sharing his most challenging moment, his darkest moment, toughest moment of his life, of his career in just a moment. So stay with us.
This is Eye on Careers, keeping an eye on your career.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here with Paul Simmons, the Chief Financial Officer of Marriott International for the Middle East and African region. Paul, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
The best part about the show is it's interactive. So if there's anyone out there who's striving to become a CFO, or maybe perhaps you're a controller, you can't quite make the jump, or maybe you work at Hilton and you want to know Marriott's strategy moving forward, you can SMS us at 4001, or you can go and download our mobile app and ask us any question about your career. Or maybe you're not anything to do with accounting, or but you're having a career issue, job search issue, whatever it is. Give us a line and we'll definitely tackle that for you. So Paul, we went away from the break saying we're going to talk about the biggest challenge you've ever faced in your life, in your career. What has been that darkest moment?
Well, I think I have to go back to, you know, when I was doing those A-levels. My mother is disabled. She had multiple sclerosis from a very young age in her 30s. And, you know, going through those A-levels at the time, it was when a multiple sclerosis really hit. And so I was having to do a lot of travel around Hertfordshire, to get her to treatments, oxygen treatments, and seeing doctors and different nurses and all sorts of, you know, she looked at every option she possibly could to try and stop the disease. And, you know, it was a real challenge. And at the same time, I was going through a pretty tough time at school. Maths was my greatest subject, and we went through, you know, four teachers in about 18 months. And when we got to actually doing the exams, you know, this wasn't just me; this was, you know, another 99 or so students. We ended up all flunking. We were studying the wrong parts of the course. Which clearly was an absolute disaster and bombshell, and nearly knocked me off my rails in terms of my career. But I bit the bullet and saw a way through, and how I could possibly get to the same result, and that's what I did. But that was tough. That was really tough.
Wow, it must be heart-wrenching, you know, when you have a parent who needs you, and as an expat, you're so away from the family.
Yeah, and I'm an only child as well, so that certainly doesn't make it any easier, because there isn't any other members of the family that can support. And actually, unfortunately, my father's also now got rheumatoid arthritis, and so needs some support. But I do a lot of talking to him on the phone and Skyping, so we keep very close, but it's not easy.
Do you ever feel like just throwing in the towel and heading back? Do you ever regret there that maybe you wanted to spend more time with your parents?
It was a real tough time to actually, have the conversation with them and telling them that, I'm moving. Yeah, because I only live 20 miles away from where they were, to, 4,500 miles away. But they know that, they knew my career was key, and they're very supportive of me moving forward with my career, and have always been like that. So, they understood it was the right thing to do.
Did they think you were crazy when you told them you were moving to the Middle East?
They I must admit, their eyebrow did go up a little bit, because they'd never been out here. But clearly they've seen, in terms of, they see the family very regularly, and, how much they enjoy and how much they're loving life here, and they want to stay here until I retire. They've made it very clear. So
they want to stay where?
They want to stay in Dubai until
I retire. They're in Dubai with you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they're here with
you?
No,
my family here, the kids and Sue, my wife, they want to stay here until I retire.
Right. I mean, it's so funny that, people don't have the accurate image of the Middle East. For the expats that live here, they don't want to leave.
Yeah.
And especially, I think UK is a bit of a warmer reception to the Middle Eastern move. But in North America, and especially in the United States, they have such a twisted view. They don't, if you took pictures of, any of these places where I assume you're probably going after this to enjoy yourself. People would never believe that you're in the Middle East for who haven't been here, which is unfortunate. But I think that view is changing with the ruler's exploits of building the world's tallest tower and the biggest mall and the biggest airport. And the image is definitely changing as we move forward. But when did you do your move? It must have been before. When did you come to the
Dubai? 2011 we came to Dubai.
Ah, okay. So yeah. the brand was quite a much alive at that point.
Yeah. But actually, it's interesting you say it because I actually have gone back to the States a number of times, and you know we're going through a huge expansion. We've gone through a massive expansion since I've been out here, but there's a lot coming down the line. And, you know, it's not easy to get the number of people in the hotels and in the head offices. And, you know, we do like to bring people in who have got experience. So I actually did a bit of a sales pitch the last time I was actually back in Washington and actually stood up in front of all of the finance people within the Washington head offices, which is probably about 500 people, and actually pointed out, which I think was a statistic that came out last year, that Dubai is the sixth safest city in the world. And there isn't
it's not the most safe. What's more safe than Dubai?
I think it's actually somewhere in Asia. And there was a couple in, I think, in Norway as well. But there was none in the UK. There was none in the whole of the US that was safer than Dubai. And that was an interesting statistic. And everybody was quite taken aback by that one.
Yeah. Well, in the US, their biggest risk is getting shot by a cop, I guess.
That seems to be the situation at the moment. Yeah.
So they're definitely not going. Yeah, people don't realize how safe it actually it actually is, that you could actually leave, I'm sure you could leave your Maserati on with the key in it and the doors open, and it will run out of gas before someone touches it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's not the most safe.
But
when you look at your other challenges, I mean, obviously that's a tough challenge that you know you're committed and dedicated to push through. What about professionally? Were there any tough moments? What have been some of your biggest business decisions that you've had to make as a CFO?
Yeah, no, I mean, actually, there've been a few actually, and I think one of them I have to actually go back to when I was in Whitbread, and I had the opportunity of becoming a finance director for one of the regions, and that was a region down in Maidstone, and that had actually been looking after 250 pubs and restaurants. And at that point, I'd been in what was called Whitbread Inn, so it was that pubs and restaurants branch for 8 years. And like I say, I had the opportunity to take that role. And I had a discussion with our group finance director, and he actually recommended I didn't take it, even though it had been something I'd been striving for the 8 previous years. And he said,
"This is a role you've been working on for 8 years.
8 years. That was my goal. I'd wanted to be this, this finance director for one of the regions." And he said it would be much better if I change branch within Whitbread, which was actually going into the hotel section, and take over a shared service center. So there was me thinking, right, I could either look after, there's 250 pubs and restaurants, be the key finance guy, or I could go into an office block and look after a shared service center, looking after 50 women, actually, it was at that point in time. And yet I
that
made
that sounds
the
like a challenge.
But I actually took the choice of looking after the shared service center and, followed.
You are brave.
Yeah, I was. But here I am now. It has paid off. But I think
that if you wouldn't have made that jump, you wouldn't have been in the hospitality business you are in now.
No, in fact, I'd have probably been made redundant because a lot of those structures then have disappeared.
Wow.
And Whitbread no longer looks after those restaurants. So, yeah,
it was a dead, the right move. Dead man walking.
Yeah.
So that saved your life, basically. That saved your career.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the time, you resented the manager for doing that. You wanted to slash his tires.
No, I wouldn't have said resent. I was just, I think I was taken aback a bit. Because it sort of, it wasn't the direction I was looking at. But yet, once we discussed it and went through it, I could see where he was coming from. Because it was, if you stay as part of that section of Whitbread, you're then going to be branded as that. And therefore, as you go up the ladder, it's going to be harder to transfer from one section of the company to another. So that's what I did. And then, you know, like I was saying earlier, in terms of me then actually becoming part of the hotel company and joining the shared service center to the hotel company, that gave me another section of Whitbread as well. So I'd already got three then behind me, which then, you know, I think, you know, put me in great stead to then progress in the future.
On one hand, you know, to move up the corporate ladder, you need to have a vision of where you're going, and you need to have kind of milestones and everything else. But at the same time, I always see, you know, one of the trends of the people who make it, that they're really focused on the job they're doing. They're not getting ahead of themselves and just trying to do the best they can with what's right in front of them. Was that kind of one of the tenets of your success?
I think, you know, like I said earlier, I've always put 110% into my roles. You know, wherever I've been, I've always tried to shine. And, you know, and that's not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to prove it. I just want to do a great job, you know, and I've always, you know, been committed in terms of the roles that I've taken on board. And whilst I'm trying to do the best job in those positions as well, I'm also thinking about, you know, where I'm going next. And I'm talking to, you know, to my peers and talking to the managers and even managers about, right, what do I need to develop to then get to the next position? I mean, I've had a lot of coaches. I've had a lot of mentors. And a lot of that has either been, you know, they've wanted to coach me, or I've actually sought out those coaches as well. And I think especially when I joined Marriott, because, you know, as you point out, there's a lot of associates in Marriott, and if you want to stand out and you want to be known, you've got to be out there and getting in front of people. And, you know, we're still very heavily based in the US, so I spend a lot of time when I'm out in the US going to meet a lot of people and getting to know them, and so that they get to know me and then register, you know, this guy's good. Well, hopefully I'm good, but yeah, this guy's good. He should be X, he should be Y. And yeah, look where we are now.
This is Paul Simmons, the Chief Financial Officer for one of the largest hotel chains in the entire world, Marriott International. He looks after the Middle East and African region. Coming up, he's going to be talking about his North Star business philosophies and his approach to running one of the top hospitality businesses in the world. So stay with us.
This is Eye on Careers, keeping an eye on your career.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And for those of you just joining us, we are looking at what it takes to climb the corporate ladder. We're looking at those success stories of individuals who have hit stride within the organization or the corporation itself. We're hearing the story of Paul Simmons, who is the chief financial officer for one of the largest hotel chains in the world, debatably on many metrics, the largest or the best, let's say. It's Marriott International, and he looks after the Middle East and African region. We talked about how he became first an accountant and worked his way up the ranks to become a CFO. And if you missed any of the story, you can catch it on our website at dubaii1038.com/iron careers and listen to the podcast. We also have many, many, many success stories there on the Ion Careers section that you can listen to and get inspired and get a blueprint for success. Paul, welcome back to Ion Careers.
Thank you.
And thank you for sharing your story with us. You know, you look after, what is it now, 170 hotels, is it?
Yeah, 170 hotels. And yet, what was it, when I came out 3.5 years ago, we were just around 35 hotels. So wow. We've gone through a huge expansion. And we're looking to double again by 2020.
Wow. Well, you have to. You know, in this region, if you're not doubling or, you know, not becoming the largest or somehow have a vision of conquering Mars, it's just not going to be a fit.
No. Right? And we do have the largest hotel here in Dubai.
The biggest hotel in Dubai.
The tallest hotel. Yeah.
The tallest.
The JW Marquis.
That's the tallest one, is it?
That's the tallest hotel in the world.
In the world?
In the world.
In the world. I didn't know it was the tallest hotel in the world.
Yeah, that's the one.
Wow. So you're going to have to build another one soon, but now that you've said that. I'm sure you know, Khalaf Habtour or someone out there will be listening. They're gonna take on the challenge. I'm sure. What are some of your business philosophies as you look to managing a business like this?
I mean, we look at it very much from a balanced scorecard approach. So, you know, it's not just about the bottom line. And, you know, that's tough for me to say being an accountant, but it's not. We look at all the areas of the business. So we look at, you know, how the guest is feeling. You know, we do a guest satisfaction survey. You know, we look at the number of hotels that we sign up. We look at our performance against the competition. And now, and clearly that's key, you know, how we're doing against the likes of Hilton, Starwood, etc. And plus we do look at the bottom line, but it is one of just, you know, many measures. And, you know, I think that helps us because we're actually looking at all those areas and looking to maximize it across all those areas. And that makes us, you know, a better hotel company.
Mm. I think, you know, when you look at it, it's funny how the metrics of success, just by changing the metrics alone, you can drastically change the performance.
Yeah.
By changing nothing else.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Same team. What are some of the shifts, you know, when you you've been in the business now for a while, what do you look at some of the key performance indicators or some of the key metrics? Or you say, you know, here at one, you know, last year we were looking at these metrics. Now we're looking at these, and it's causing a shift in performance.
Yeah, I mean, we look within the hotel industry, you know, we look around our occupancy and our occupancies across each of the countries that we're represented in. We look at our average room rate. We look at our overall margins as well, because there are a number of companies that actually benchmark us. You know, and that's keen for the owners of these hotels, because they'll want, you know, a hotel manager that is actually going to deliver the best for them. You know, we've got 45 million Marriott reward customers across the globe that are using those rewards in our hotels. You know, that's a massive number. You know, that's great for an owner to hear that he's going to potentially have 45 million customers that are going to be, you know, represented by a Marriott reward, you know, having that Marriott rewards card.
And you're also an economic indicator, right? So when we look at a region, we look at that utilization rate as an indication of business fitness or the robustness of the business narrative that's taking place in that geography.
Yeah.
So you're constantly under the microscope.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And Dubai seems to have one of the strongest narratives in that sense that from what you obviously know better, but I think some of the studies I've seen is, you know, that we definitely have a very healthy growth on average room rate and occupancy.
Yeah, I think actually Dubai's got the highest RevPAR in the globe.
In the globe?
Yeah.
So this is the place to do business.
This is the place to be.
This is the place to be. Yeah. So that's good. That's good to hear something positive, you know, because you know, it's such a flip-flopping market right now. One minute they're saying, oh, you know, the U.S., great job growth, and then the next story is out like, no, it's down, it's up, it's down, it's, you know, you don't know which way things are going anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, when we look at the RevPAR, we're trending the highest in the world.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And you have the highest hotel in the world,
and we have the highest hotel in
and
the
world. You know, so you got to be looking up. That's good. So if you're out there, if you're, you know, wondering what's going to happen with your career, you're in the best city in the world to drive your career.
I could almost do a sales pitch here for jobs in Marriott as well.
Yeah,
couldn't I?
You could. Are you hiring? Do you need a controller?
We're always hiring. Like I say, we're growing from what, the 170 now to 300 just by 2020, which is only just around the corner. So yeah, we are looking for.
We have to thank our sponsor as well, who's the ICAEW, who's the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales, who is also one of the breeding grounds for individuals like yourself or CFOs.
Yeah.
And I think it's what, 86% or 84% of FTSE 250 companies have either a chairman, a CEO, or a CFO who's an ICAEW qualified accountant. So I think we had one accountant on who said, you know, it's hard to find a poor accountant. So it's not a bad profession. So are you're hiring in your department or in the hotel as a whole?
We're actually hiring in the hotels at this point in time. Yeah.
What are you looking looking for?
I mean, we're looking for, like you say, directors of finance, which would be heading up the finance function in the property, and then a team. And, you know, that team can be anything from 5 to, you know, 25, 30 associates. And, yeah, I think we've already got another probably half a dozen hotels in the Dubai area that are going to be opening in the next couple of years. So there's certainly going to be opportunities there.
Well, you know, I think when you look at your business philosophies, what you said, you know, you started with success. Like, how do you define success and what is success? And I think you can look at this on the macro level as a business or on the micro level as someone managing your career. And I think a lot of people go through life using other people's success metrics. And, you know, it's so often I have candidates who's like, yeah, give me the CEO job, give me the GM job. Well, why do you want that? You know, you're just doing that because you think that's the next thing, and they often become miserable because it's not really the right fit for them. It's not something they wanted. They're just doing it because it's society's metric of success. And you can fall prey to that. So is that an exercise where you really sit back and you say, hey, for us, you know, one of the things, you know, it looked like you were describing was a triple bottom line. We just don't want to have big profits. We want to be socially conscious. This is important to us. The definition of success is where it should start, no?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, we spend a lot of time developing and mentoring, you know, all of the people, not just at the head office level, but out in the hotels. And, you know, we try, but keep their feet on the ground as well. You know, don't, like you say, everybody's not going to be a CFO. Not everybody wants to be a CFO. And I think that's another good thing about Marriott is that we give the people the opportunity to do what they want to do. So if they want to stay and do in the same job, that's absolutely fine by us. But if they do want to progress, they have to demonstrate that they want to progress, but then we give them the opportunities and the tools to do it. You know, we are renowned for the amount of training that we give people. But, as you know, it goes back to, you know, what Mr. Marriott said, you know, in terms of you look after the people in the company, you look after the associates, they'll look after the customers, and the customers keep coming back. And if the customers keep coming back, that's going to be good for your bottom line.
And, you know, it's funny when you look at it, you know, when you talk about individuals who want to stay at a certain level, there's a lot of value in that. And in fact, you know, I think society gives you a false equation that you think that being ambitious and being successful will give you happiness. And it's actually, in many instances, the reverse. Ambition by itself, by definition, means you're discontent.
Yeah.
Discontent where you are.
Yeah.
And so this is an actual inverse equation to happiness. And in a sense, you know, one of the themes through your career is you're saying, look, I'm finding value and happiness in what I'm actually doing right now. And in fact, by default, that breeds your success.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So I think people need to be wary of that. What do you look at as some of the big challenges as a leader? You know, do you find it difficult to create ownership across when you have 600,000 staff members, or is the rate of change of the market as soon as you put it in a hotel, it's obsolete?
Yeah, I think your last day is spot on. It's the rate of change. It's amazing now. You know, gone of the day of the baby boomers, which I am, and now we're talking about millennials. And you know what millennials want is completely different from what we wanted. You know, everything's got to be instant gratification. You know, they'll want, you know, if they get a reward, they'll want it straight away. They don't want to have to wait for it. You know, they'll want to get that benefit. They'll probably want the benefit on their phone, you know, so they actually think and then go and, you know, redeem it straight away. But that's something new. And that's something that, you know, that we're spending a lot of time focusing on because they are a different breed.
The millennials, the world is changing. This is Paul Simmons, the chief financial officer for one of the largest hotel chains in the world, Marriott International. He looks after the Middle East and Africa. Coming up, he's going to talk about what he looks for when he's hiring, what it takes to be a top performer in the hospitality industry. So stay with us.
This is Eye on Careers, keeping an eye on your career.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are listening to Paul Simmons, the Chief Financial Officer for one of the largest hotel chains in the world, Marriott International. He looks after the Middle East and African region. Welcome back, Paul.
Thank you.
And I, you know, obviously I knew the JW Marriott Marquis is a fantastic establishment. It looks really cool with the purple lights and everything, but I didn't know it was the tallest hotel in the world.
Yeah, 1,608 rooms.
1,608 rooms. That's amazing. It's a beautiful, beautiful facility. And I think you guys did phenomenally well right out of the gates. I mean, like, as soon as it opened, it just became one of the business destinations.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So there's, I guess, quite a bit of strategy about that. But you also have to have a great staff. So what do you look for when you're hiring?
I mean, you know, we look out, you know, look for a great cross-section of people. I mean, clearly, people that have already been in the hospitality industry, they know what it's all about. You know, we're a 24/7 company. And so if people have already got that under their belt, then, you know, they naturally are greater prospects in terms of, you know, coming into the business and in any area, that whether that be within finance or within operations. But we do take chances as well. We if people have got the right sort of passion, and, you know, certainly when we go through the interview process, which we take very seriously, I mean, when we're looking at actual general managers, the whole senior exec of the Middle East Africa team will actually put them through the interview process.
How many people is that?
So that would be, you know, 7 or 8 people actually doing the interview. So that would be the head of HR, that would be the head of finance, that would be the head of operations, all getting involved. But then, and then we come together and we make the decision as to who's the top candidate.
Do you need to have consensus, or is it okay if, you know, like, say 3 say no and 5 say yes? Is it the line, the person who that person's reporting to has the final say, even if everyone says no?
No, to be honest, I mean, the way that we go through the process and we go through the discussions, I mean, I've been here 3.5 years, and I don't think there's ever been a time where we haven't taken on the person that we haven't all agreed was the right person. But, you know, we tend to have a lot of, you know, service in this industry. So I think, you know, just by the very nature of the beast, we're all comfortable in terms of what each other thinks, but we also know what each other thinks as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to a certain degree, we think along the same lines, even though I'm finance.
Right. So you have this kind of democratic approach. I always wonder, though, when you do that, you know, is the game changer or the guy who or girl who's really going to mix things up, do they have a chance?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we go for people with passion, you know, people that are, you know, that are clearly there for the future within Marriott and aren't going to be there just for that job, but it's actually somebody that's actually then going to be promoted in the future as well. You know, we're always thinking about the, you know, the next role.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What about, you know, what are some of the mistakes you see, you know, because you've successfully managed a very difficult structure to rise up where you must be, what, in the top 20 or top 50 senior executives for a company with 600,000 employees.
Yeah.
You're in the top 20, would it be?
Probably in the top 200. I mean, it's a
top 200. It's big.
It's big.
Okay, so top 200 out of 600,000, that's a tough thing to manage. When you look at other people, what are some of the mistakes they make in managing their own careers? Because at sometimes you can be your own worst enemy.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones is that people expect to be tapped on the shoulder for a role, and rather than going out and getting it. And I think within Marriott, we're great at, you know, informing people that is not going to be the way. If you actually want a position, you want to progress, you've got to go out and grab it. You've got to demonstrate that you're up for the next role and that you've got the passion for that role. I also think self-confidence is always a tough one. You know, people sometimes sort of shy away from, you know, from areas within the business or actually with meeting people. I've always taken the approach that I'm going to go and do something. Even if it's out of my comfort zone, I will do it. I mean, actually being here on the radio, this is my first time on the radio. You know, it could have been quite easy for me to say, no, I'm away or whatever. But no, as soon as I got the opportunity, I grabbed it. And I think that's, I think that's something that people should learn from. Just go out there and grab it. Be prepared to take a risk. I mean, life's all about taking risks and failing. We learn by our failures.
Right. And I think as well, just to add on what you're saying is about speaking up and saying you want a role, there's a positive way to do it. And I don't necessarily subscribe to what a lot of people do in the Middle East is they go and get an offer from a competitor and say, listen, I'm going to, you know, give me this raise or move me here or I'm leaving. That is not the most best way to finesse your promotion. Stepping up into the role and saying, you know, hey, I would really love to be a CFO. What are the things I need to do to get there? Can we work together? And building a collaboration, not a conflict. Because I think the other thing that happens is some people let it boil or fester that, hey, I haven't had gotten a raise in this long or I haven't been promoted. No one's tapping my shoulder that they then become hostile.
Yeah. I mean, I always tell people to, you know, to move around. You know, whether that be across continents or whether that be across different parts of finance. So for finance people with me in, you know, in the Middle East, I think it's great if they come into a head office role, then move back out into a hotel, then go from a hotel in the Middle East over to Asia Pacific, then go over to Europe and really get a great breadth of knowledge and experiences. And that's the way that they'll progress. I mean, that's, you know, that's how I did it. And, you know, it's worked for me, and I think it's got, you know, a lot of mileage to it.
So, first of all, having the passion, having the self-confidence, speaking up and building collaboration in the right way, what's your advice to anyone out there who wants to be more successful in their career?
I think, you know, really, like I say, I mean, I think it's, you know, having that goal, seeing your goal, and then following it with a passion and be prepared to, you know, take risks, get out of your comfort zone. I mean, that's another thing. I think people are quite risk averse to getting out of their comfort zone. But once you do it and once you keep doing it, then it almost becomes the norm for you.
Right. I saw another real trait in you is that level of focus that you just kept, you know, on that. I want to be a CFO. You failed. Not your fault. There was other issues going on. Your mother was sick. There was problems with the instructor. But a lot of people could have got dissuaded. You didn't. It's that persistence as well as the focus. So you're persistently pushing and focused in the same area. And in fact, you know, one of now the you know, as you move into the next chapter, I would suspect that one of the some of the bedrock of your success in this next chapter of your career will be the fact that you're focused not only in being a CFO, but you're focused in hospitality, that you know the ins and outs, the tricks of not just that, but running hospitality in Middle East and Africa, which is one of the most exciting areas for, as we all know.
Most exciting.
The most. Yeah, the most. But don't you think a lot of people miss that focus? They shift, they drift, they flip through industries. They change employers. I mean, you've effectively been with the same employer since 1989.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's, you know, take a few knocks. You know, don't get disheartened if everything doesn't go your way. I mean, like I say, I've proved that. You know, I've gone through that same sort of thing. You know, there are opportunities to get what you want. You've just got to have the passion to do it and the enthusiasm to do it and show that you've got that enthusiasm to do it. Make sure people see you for what you are and see, you know, how committed you are to actually move forward.
Great. Well, Paul, thank you so much for taking the time. I flew by. Hopefully we can have you on the show again sometime soon.
My pleasure.